On this episode of Industrial Talk, did you know that we have only mapped 20% of the ocean floor? Just 20. And did you know we know more about the surface of Mars and the moon than we do about our ocean floor? This episode, we're going to be talking about how do we map it? What's the technology? And why is it important to you and me and the world? Let's get cracking.
Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, once again, welcome to Industrial Talk, a place, a platform that is dedicated to you industrial heroes, the companies that get it done. You are bold, you are brave, you dare greatly, you innovate, you solve problems, you're changing lives, and you're changing the world. Take that to the bank. That's why this particular platform is dedicated to you, because yes, we need to celebrate what you do. All right, we're also sponsored. We're sponsored by NEOM. That is the community of the future. You got to go out to NEOM.com. They're putting all this innovation, this technology into action. That's NEOM.com. Find out more, as well as Cap Logistics. Now, you know as well as I do, absolutely, that supply chain, logistics, it's a big deal. We all know that now. You need to find a trusted partner. Cap Logistics. Go to caplogistics.com. Let's get cracking. So I'm having this conversation. His name is Yi Chao. He is the president, or I don't know, he's the CEO and founder of C-Trek. Yeah. His purpose, his vision, his passion is mapping the seafloor. And yeah, we're going to have a conversation about why that's important. And it is. And the technology, the innovation is all there. It's making it happen is the real challenge. But he is going to tell that story. Before we get into that conversation, I've got some questions. As I go down this road and we start talking about all the innovation, as we talk about manufacturing, as we talk about industry, as we talk about Industry 4.0 and all of the things that are taking place, the speed, the velocity of how this new world is happening and how it is impacting your life, my life, and everybody's life around the world, the question I have is this Industry 4.0, manufacturing, ag, whatever, is it going to solve many of the problems that deal with, let's say, important stuff like food, important stuff like water, important stuff like power and health and everything that's associated with that? Does this technology, does this innovation make it cost effective for others that might not have the financial resources to be able to do it? And the reason I'm saying that, I'm reading a book. Where is it? I don't know where it is. Anyway, we start talking about all the technology, the innovation, and the really incredible thinking that is existing out there. And my thought goes to, well, that's great for a lot of these big, gigantic businesses where they can, you know, tip their toe in the water and make a mistake, you know, suck up the cost associated with it, do it again. They're able to have that luxury to be able to do that. Now, I believe, me personally, I think it's a really exciting time. And it's an exciting time because I believe this technology will be cost effective, will be driven down. We'll have the ability to be able to look at our food. Now, I learned this a couple of days ago. 30-40% of all food manufactured or produced field. It's probably plus or minus. If you're a farmer, please don't hit me too hard. 30-40% is just is lost. 30-40%. That's a hell of a statistic. How can we eliminate that waste? And increase the yield, eliminate the waste. There's some real benefits. Does the technology have the ability to be able to do that? What are the solutions? Is it cost effective, or is it just way out of the possibility of even deploying so that we never see the real benefits associated with this innovation? The same thing with water. The same thing with housing, right? Is this technology, and I just pose it out to you, is this technology, this innovation, where we are today, able to address those fundamental health, right? Those fundamental benefits of living in a society, right? And then we can start talking about the other cost elements and all of this good stuff. But if you just look at it specifically from the point of, is this technology enabling us to meet basic needs, food, water, shelter, health, and education? Huge. This is unacceptable. We should be able to have a greater education. It is a renaissance when it comes to this. I just throw that out to you. Or does things get in the way? I love big companies. They do a lot of great things. They're able to do things. They're able to push the envelope. They're able to innovate. But how do we create this wonderful world that everybody has access to all of this great thinking, technology, education? Just throw it out there. I don't have an answer. I do my part. My platform, the platform Industrial Talk, has an education component, has a marketing component, has just a component that is dedicated to other entities, other countries that need access to information and education and technology. That's my little play. All right. Yi Chao is the individual in the hot seat. Again, CEO, founder. C-Trek is the company, T-R-E-C. That's C-Trek. And you'll get the innovation is fantastic. I was dazzled by the fact that we do not know 80% of the ocean floor. We don't. We're able to sort of map ports that are near land, right? But then when it comes into the major parts of the waterway, no, we just have no clue. The technology, the solution by C-Trek, by Team E, is able to run these buoys indefinitely. They're able to charge the batteries. They're able to leverage what exists out there in the water and be able to charge battery. I don't need to go into it. E needs to go into it. So enjoy this particular conversation with E. E, welcome to Industrial Talk. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Thank you for the opportunity. Good to see you.
This is great. I mean, I'm looking forward to this conversation just because listeners offline, we just sit there and chat and talk and talk more. And we're missing out on a lot of recording opportunities to pick E's brain. By the way, it's Y-I, but it's sounded as A-E-I-O-U-E. So make sure that you note that. And when you go out to his stat card out on LinkedIn, it's Y-I-C-H-A-O. Put a little comma in there. You got C-Trek. That's S-E-A-T-R-E-C. You will find him. Reach out. You will not be disappointed. All right, before we get going, we've got to know who you are. Give us a little background, E, on who you are.
Yeah, I grew up in China. I got a bachelor degree in college in physics. I came to Princeton to get my PhD in oceanography. I spent 20 years working for NASA Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, Los Angeles. And I developed this technology, which is really, I cannot go to bed without seeing it commercialized. So I left Caltech a few years ago, spin off C-Trek, to develop a commercial product, find a wide range of applications. So here we are today with C-Trek.
See, and it's pretty cool. Now, listeners, we're going to be talking a little bit about what that means, what the business is. But for the most part, what interested me about this particular conversation is that we know more about the surface of the moon and surface of Mars, right, than we do about our ocean. Can you explain a little bit about that and why this is so important? Why do we need to track the ocean?
It's totally. That's a statement you'll find in newspaper and a magazine. So we know more about surface of the moon and the Mars than our seafloor. It's just a very difficult to map the seafloor. You need a lot of ships. You need big sonars driving around the ship around the globe to measure every part of the global ocean. So estimated take about 300 ships dedicated for the entire year, not doing nothing else but mapping the seafloor. So you can easily multiply $50,000 a day. That's almost $5 billion to map the entire seafloor. So there's no single agency organization committed to come up with $5 billion to map the seafloor.
Yeah, I don't have it. Sounds cool, but I would, you know what I would do? I would help you. Why is mapping the seafloor so doggone important?
You can think about many ways. You can think about navigating your next destination with the Google map with 80% holes. So basically, nobody want to drive their cars in an unknown area with the 80% gap of the Google map, right? So that's just a fundamental way to have a map in the ocean to help us to understand and protect the ocean and the planet. And there's a lot of ocean applications and operations I see need a precise map. And then that's why for regional effort, people go out to do a dedicated mapping. If you put a wind farm in the ocean, for example, you'll need to map the seafloor. You want to put an offshore farming, you want to explore what the resources in the, on the seafloor, the first thing you need to do is go map them. So you want to protect them, you want to understand them, and you also want to put in the seafloor map in the climate models. So you can know the flow and the circulation, how they regulate the climate and the weather. So near the mountains, subsea mountains, a lot of it's habitat ecosystem, we don't really know. So we want to know them before we lose them, so we better protect our ocean and planet.
Your map analogy, 80% accurate, or 80% accurate with Google Maps. I think of MapQuest. Remember MapQuest?
Yeah.
That sent us off a couple of rabbit holes a couple of times because it was not accurate. I feel the pain. Now, why would I – let's talk about mapping, because the key here is that 80% of the ocean floor is not mapped. Is that correct or more?
Correct. Yeah, 80% roughly. Depends on the, if you're near the coastal of the US, Japan, Hawaii, they are 90% map charted because we have a lot of ships, we have a lot of utility of those places. Going to south of the equator, some of the coastline around developing and underdeveloped countries, 80-90% of the ocean is uncharted.
And see, and it's sort of, you showed me a map, and what I was fascinated by is just, it lacks coverage. You're mapping the floor, don't get me wrong, you're mapping the sea, but it's still very sort of line here, line there, line, and it's somewhat suboptimal at best. Now, if I was interested in putting out a wind farm out there, okay, there's my location. I've done my study. This is where I want to plant my wind farm. Boom. Why wouldn't it be beneficial or why wouldn't I want a sort of a case by case? Instead of doing big bang, I just go to that one location and say, got to map it.
Yeah, there's a lot of different customers in different areas and then interested at different applications. So the first thing they do, they spend a lot of time charter boats to go out to map the seafloor. There's no iPhone or Google Maps you can call to in the ocean saying, I'm ready to start operation tomorrow. So that's really the first task for any offshore operation. Could be wind farm, could be aquaculture, could be seafloor mining, could be exploration, just to understand what's on the seafloor. Before you start operation, you save people resources, you reduce the fossil fuel, carbon, CO2, dioxide emission. So there's having a map to guide our operation is just a fundamental information we need to have.
And I agree with you 100%. I was just doggone it. We have maps all the time. It's since the beginning of time we've had maps, right?
Exactly. Hundreds of years.
It's amazing. Now let me ask you this one question. Aren't we mapping the floor? Don't we have buoys out there? Don't we have equipment out there? What's happening out there?
Yeah, traditionally the seafloor is mapped by ships. So you have a big sonar you put on the ship. Most of the ship have sonars. And then so wherever they go, they map the seafloors. That's why if you look, the seafloor data is all go by straight line, wherever the ship goes. So near those islands in Hawaii, you have irradiated to every continent. So those are the mapping we have so far. In the last 20 years, we have been developing robotic vehicles like autonomous underwater vehicles that they call AUVs, and they can carry sonars. But the problem is, this sonar autonomous system powered by batteries. When the battery runs out, you need a mothership nearby. So by the end of the day, you still have to use expensive ships. So what we started about 10 years ago to ask the question, can we recharge battery by the sea? We have unlimited ocean thermal energy associated with temperature difference. If we can find a way to recharge battery autonomously, and then we have a robot can dive, can swim, can map the seafloor continuously without expensive ship operation. So once you remove ship and then people in the loop, then you can scale. So you can deploy 100 or even 1,000 of these, tens of thousands of these robots, and they can map the seafloor just like your Roomba machine vacuum your seafloor, or room floor when you go to the work.
By the way, I like that product because I have one.
Yeah.
And if you ever want to think about getting a Roomba, do so because they do a good job. They do.
I have one in my house too. The problem is half the time they die under my sofa. They cannot find a way home to get a charging station.
That's why you have the app. And you gotta try to find it.
So our goal is to turn the ocean a thermal energy reservoir into a charging station, into an energy source. You can recharge your Roomba at the sea, map the seafloor, and then you can scale up to have thousands of these Roombas working for you.
And it would just last indefinitely, really, right?
Yeah, almost. So it's like your car. You can have 100,000 miles and something will fail if it moves. So almost indefinitely.
Yeah, but then it does what it needs to do. It recharges the battery. It utilizes the thermal clients to do whatever it needs to do. And then how does it send data? What technology is there to say, got it, cool data. Now I gotta receive it.
Yeah, completely sustainable, recharging by the sea. So we prevent people dumping batteries in the ocean. So that's one value added to our system. Every time the robots come to the surface, they can talk to the communication satellite. There's a Iridium satellite network. There are 40 plus satellites. As you know, in the future, as we launch more and more micro satellites, you're going to stream videos every part of the planet, and we're going to talk to the satellite every part of the ocean. So that's not a problem. The transfer data getting cheaper as more companies get into the satellite communication. And then we can essentially transfer data near real time.
Pretty cool. It's a pretty cool future. I like the ability to be able to do that. Now, in the case of thermal clients, I get it. I get the technology and the temperature differential, all of that good stuff. Got it. What do we do about when you start going further north and further south in the water where the temperature variation is not as drastic?
Yeah, that's a good question. Two-thirds of the ocean have sufficient temperature gradient once you dive into hundreds of meters. There are about 20-30% of the ocean, there's just simply not enough temperature difference. And then you have to use recharging systems by the time of the battery close to runs out, like your phone have one bar left, and then your robot have to be smart enough to say, let's find a nearby temperature difference. And that was almost like the next gas station. Where's the next gas station? So you'll find the right place, either near the coast, you have a charging station, or you'll find the closer to the sort of subtropical area, you have sufficient temperature difference. Some area doesn't have temperature difference in the winter time, so you try to conserve more energy, and then you harvest more in the summer when the thermocline get reestablished. So there's a number of different strategies. There are charging stations near the coast connected by the fiber optic cables, so that technology already exists. So if you can swim near the coast, that's great. You can get charged by cables. And if you swim nearby temperature difference, you can get any electricity from our charging station.
One of the things that I want you to expand upon just ever so briefly, in our conversation, you said a benefit, among others, a benefit of mapping, is how ships navigate the ocean and they can mm-hmm. be more efficient. Can you expand upon that a little bit?
Yeah, mapping seafloor is just the first application we are going after. It's such an obvious target to fill the gap. Is everybody recognizes that need is not being met. As we expand the commercial application, we can start to ask the question: what additional data we can collect in the ocean? Ocean is plays such an important role in climate, in our economy, the blue economy, and we need just a lot of data. The problem today is ocean just very hard to collect data from physical state of the temperature and the salinity to the chemistry, the biology, and all the productivity, and then even the sound noise in the ocean. So there's a lot of information. It's three-dimensional. That's why I make it so difficult. As a satellite oceanographer, worked for NASA 20 years, you can launch a lot of satellites, you can measure the surface, but that's only two-dimensional, and there's no information below the surface unless you send the ships or robots into the ocean. So as our energy capacity increases, we can start carry more sensors, start to measure more parameters in the ocean, such as we can monitor the flow field, the velocity in the ocean. So when the shipping company have a ship go from Singapore to San Francisco, you know, rather than avoiding storms, you can also dial in a smartphone to ask the question, do we go against the current or go with the current? Can we save fuel 10%? Or do I have to arrive there on time? What I can do to preserve my fuel consumption? I can slow down. I don't have to get to San Francisco by that day, rather than waiting and create noise offshore. I can take my time, I can save 10%. 10% of the shipping cost is a huge amount of cost under the CO2 emission into the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's more than $20, that's for dollar. But what I do like is the simple fact that I think you once you put that technology in the water, wherever it is, whatever that looks like, you're able to begin the collection of data, no matter what it is, that three-dimensional data. It might just start with, hey, we're just mapping the floor. But the asset exists within the water. Then you could say, hey, you know what else would be good? This, and then yeah. This. And it's not as if the analytical capability doesn't exist. I mean, right. We all talk about it. Got to go to the cloud. You're storing all this data someplace. Got to go someplace. But it's all doable.
Yeah, think about us is to provide this platform is scalable. We can have a million of these robots if you want to. And then we can carry a variety of different sensors. Some of the sensors we never thought about today, maybe a year from now, there will be a new blue economy need information. They can carry, they just give us a sensor. We can attach. We can deliver the data to the cloud so the customer doesn't have to deploy 10,000 robots because robots already in the ocean automatically have incremental cost. You can put in a sensor into our platform, get the data from the cloud. So you can prescribe the data just to show up on your smartphone. You can make decisions. You can use the information rather than, I need 2 years to charter a vessel to buy 10,000 robots, and then to go out to collect data. You can start your operation tomorrow.
Boom. And it's the analogy that I see in my head. This is with utilities. You got poles. you got many power poles. Mm-hmm. Bup, 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 bup. And in on those poles, there are multiple carriers on the pole because it's there. The same thing exists. It's a joint solution to be able to deploy out in the water, whatever the convergence of technology requires. It's there. And you don't have, cool.
Yeah, think about it. We take for granted there's a weather station. So weather station, we launch a balloon every 12 hours. And so you have a 3D data. So you can get your weather prediction every point. You put a zip code, the weather forecast showed up, right? Because of the weather station everywhere. And then think about the ocean. There's only a handful of moorings and buoys today. And think about us. We are enabling putting weather station in the water everywhere. And they can dive to 1,000 meters to collect the data if necessary, or they go to 500 meters, whatever depth, you can control them. So you basically get this three-dimensional weather data in the ocean. You can use for different industries, whoever go utilize the ocean. As we get to food and biofuel and CO2, everybody have a stake in the game to protect our ocean, to use the ocean.
Yeah, I like that, man. And the other thing, there's a safety component, right? It's like there's better predictions, better modeling, better whatever. Anything's better, right?
Yeah, navigation, some of the submerged mountains in the seamount. There are 30,000 seamount in the ocean is uncharted or poorly charted, because if the ship doesn't run in on top of the seamount, and then you don't really have a map. So you have the 30,000 mountains in the ocean. You roughly know where they are within a couple of miles because satellites tell us so. But you don't really know how tall they are, what kind of shape they are. And then if you have a diving vehicle, you know, you can hit the mountain, you can get damaged.
Yeah, see, it's hard. It's hard to see, have a decent picture. I mean, it's one thing to have a diving vehicle. I mean, somebody could dive and, you know, go right up to it, but you can't see it. They can't see the girth of it. No, that's funny.
There's a lot of unmanned, manned and unmanned vehicles in the water need those maps and the safety navigation.
So you had me at C-Track, but what are the roadblocks? What are we dealing with here? Why is this? Why are we able to get all warm and fuzzy about, you know, what Elon Musk is doing, and yet we just ignore the majority of our world?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Ocean is far away. I think for most people, ocean is far away there, and that they don't see it every day. They don't touch it every day. And we don't really, our launching a robotic vehicle is not as glamorous as launching a satellite, and then you see the rocket, $100 million. Ocean is very tough environment to work in, is all the other things. And then scaling the technology, bring the technology to the ocean also is very time consuming. So ocean is very challenging to work with, and they're very hard to test. You cannot do a lot of experiment unless you go to sea. So that's really make our engineering cycle iteration is much longer. So take longer to bring the hardware, which is hard enough, hardware compared to software. Now hardware have to deploy in the ocean, test it in the ocean, sometimes take months, take years just to learn one lesson, right? Go through one iteration. It's not software. You push the button, you update version 23, you know?
Right.
So for us, that's really the challenge. It's very costly to do experiment in the sea. It's very challenging. And also the time to mature the technology is relatively long.
Yeah. Is there a way that we can sort of incrementally begin this journey? Like, I get the $5 billion. That would be great. That would be like, yeah, all right, man. That's we've done it. But really, in the real world, there's always this desire to sort of, hey, can we do this? And then can we do this? And then we can. Is there a way of being able to do that and be able to control that?
Yeah, sure. C-Track recently relocated to San Diego six months ago, really looking at San Diego to grow C-Track to the next level. There's a number of research institutes in the San Diego area, a lot of defense applications. And also we're looking at many of the emerging new commercial applications. One of the really exciting projects I want to devote my time in the coming years is to focus on offshore aquaculture to grow seaweed in the ocean. So we can, rather than plant trees, we can grow seaweed in the ocean. We can use our energy system to create upwelling to bring the nutrient supply from the deep sea to the surface. And then where you have a sunlight, you can grow seaweed. It's completely natural. You can harvest the seaweed to make food, make materials, even replace plastic we are using. You know, now we talk about plastic problems. If we use seaweed, it's completely biodegradable. We can make biofuel in a clean way. And then, or even we just put the seaweed to the seafloor, and then we just take CO2 away from the atmosphere, and then we can combat the climate change. So I see a really exciting project I'm going to work on in San Diego. It's focused on the seaweed economy, seaweed industry.
Matt, we're going to have to get you back on the podcast on that one, just because that's a whole nother conversation, because I'm intrigued.
If we make enough seaweed, maybe you can find a seaweed burger pretty soon.
You know it's going to happen.
It ain't going to happen. It's a matter of time.
It's a matter of time. All right. Yep. We're going to have to wrap this up now. How do people get a hold of you there?
YI@ctrack.com. Go to ctrack.com. Connect me with LinkedIn, social media, Twitter. We have Ctrack Inc. So all kind of way to get in touch. Be happy to talk to all of them. Thank you.
I love it, man. This was a great conversation. I like this one, E.
Thank you so much.
You know, it sort of was different, but I enjoyed the heck out of it. Well done. And I'm excited for you.
Thank you for the opportunity. Looking forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, in which we will. Seaweeds. Make a note of that, listeners. Seaweeds next. All right, listeners, thank you very much for joining Industrial Talk. We're going to wrap it up on the other side. Fear not. You're going to have all the contact information for Mr. E and then some. So stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
Each out. Talk about a company making a difference. A company leveraging technology, leveraging innovation to make our lives better. Ctrack E, reach out. Major, major stack card out there. I forgot to highlight this. We've got an event January 11th through the 12th. It's a virtual event, so don't worry about it. And it's free. Price point right. Catalyst Empowerment Summit. That is a must attend. So I'm going to have a link. It'll be out on industrialtalk.com. But just get signed up for it. You're going to hear some great speakers talking about, if you're a catalyst, it's a must. So anyway, Catalyst Empowerment Summit, January 11th through the 12th. Put that on your calendar. All right, be bold, be brave, dare greatly. Let's change the world together. Let's leverage innovation and technology so that we can solve these problems and make this world a better place. Thank you very much. Hang out with E. You will not be disappointed. We're going to have another great conversation right around the corner, so stay tuned.